Good evening, St. Andrew's Radio listeners. This is Get to Know with Will, Victoria and Rachel. And today we have David from Curiosity with us today. And it's an absolutely lovely day to be doing this. So usually it's very sort of dark and sort of cold. But this is one of the very few Sundays that I can remember where you might be listening to this outside, if you have an internet connection outside, that is, of course. But actually very, very much enjoying the day today. And
it's been such a lovely day. I've been outside sitting in the sun with my friends all day and just enjoying St. Andrews, to be honest. I am very happy to be back with you and very welcome to Dave Christian as well. Let's see. Yeah, for those of you who are a bit confused about Toby not being here.
Yeah, this doesn't sound like Toby.
Right. And for those of you who missed last week's show, we can inform you again that he is coming back, but in September, restarting first year in September.
Yes.
So he is away traveling for the moment. So I'm his replacer, which I'm very happy about.
And today with us, we have Dave Christian from Curiosity. And it's very nice to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. Good evening, all.
Yeah, good evening. And so we just wanted to quickly talk about, maybe not everybody here knows, or not all the listeners know, what Curiosity is. So if you maybe could you give us a quick overview of what Curiosity is as an establishment?
As an overview, Curiosity is a fusion between a sort of an antique shop, a music shop, a curio shop, an unusual type item shop, basically all fused into one.
And, yeah, I guess that's a difficult question to give you
overview
really, of Curiosity.
It doesn't fit into one particular genre or the other. It's quite unusual.
Well, I can say that it's definitely one of my favourite shops in St. Andrews. I love going into that shop because you can literally spend hours and hours and hours looking at all the items that you have, and you just always seem to find new things. It's amazing. And my favorite section is the vinyl section, I must say. Great music that you have there.
Yes, unusual. The way the shop works is that we take in items from people and sell on their behalf on a commission basis. We also buy things. And it kind of grows from there. People bring their old record collections. So one day that you've got a whole section on classical music, and the next day you've got the whole every single album from the Beatles and the Stones and the Hendrix, Clapton, etc. So it does change, although they don't hang around too long, but they sell quite well. And of course, vinyl is making a great big resurgence. I think especially amongst all your listeners and all students all over, they're rediscovering vinyl.
It does sound different. I have listened to a few vinyl records, not too many, but it does have a sort of unique sound compared to sort of digitized or CD sounds. And it's quite unique. And I think that's probably why it's having a resurgence.
Yeah, I just find when you start listening to a record player, you can't really listen to music on the computer anymore because you can just hear the difference. And you hear that it sounds, you know, very studio made sort of. And it just sounds more authentic, I guess,
and raw.
Record.
I think that's a good word. Raw is a good word as opposed to sort of clinical, perfect situation. Whereas a record player, you hear the odd little bump and scratch and you know that it's real music. And, of course, they used to lay it down in sort of one or two takes in a studio as opposed to overlaying it all in modern ways now.
Perfecting it with technology, et cetera, auto-tune, all of that nonsense.
Right.
Should we go back to your background a little bit and see where everything started? Where are you from to begin with?
Well, originally I'm from London, as your listeners can tell by the accent. I moved up here some 10 years ago after having lived in New York in the States for quite a while. And that, in fact, where the concept of Curiosity was. I don't know whether it was born or whether it's ever. I've never seen another shop like it, either in America or in the UK. But certainly that's where it was, and I sort of worked over there for a while. And then the company that sort of had it, I said, "Well, look, I'm going back to the UK. How about you putting something over there?" Of which they very kindly entrusted me with running the whole thing and pioneering it, if you like, which I did. And we've been going down St Andrews for a few years, very successfully. And as I say, we're thankfully very popular amongst, as I say, the student community, visitors, golfers, all alike. It's, so there's something for everybody, you know, from sort of... Our youngest customer, I think, was three. little young girl who bought a ring. And our oldest one, I had a great chat with him. He was actually 94.
Wow.
And he, I mean, this guy was amazing. You know, he totally, I mean, I wish I was as fit as him. And he is amazing. And it's such a place, it's become almost a meeting place. You meet such a different, eclectic mix of people.
Yeah, I was just about to ask, because the shop is very intimate. So I'm guessing, just as you're saying, that it becomes more of a meeting place than an actual shop. That you end up having very interesting conversation with people.
Sure, you interact. You know, somebody, you'll be looking at something on a shelf, and then somebody go, "Oh, wow, look at that's unusual." And then you strike up a conversation. And anybody listening out there, if you've done any business deals on my premises, remember me for the 10% commission. All right?
So, do you think that the location and the sort of feel of St Andrews, in that it's quite a unique town in itself, do you think that? Curiosity works because it is in St Andrews and in quite a sort of unique place, and as it is a unique shop.
Yes, I think the concept of curiosity really only works in a town where you have three different parts to it in terms of visitors. You have, for example, the student population. You have what I call the domestic tourism, where people from all parts of the UK would come and spend a few days, you know, either in caravans or visiting all the attractions in St Andrews. You then have the international visitors, which I lump in with the, sort of the golfing as well.
Right.
So you've got these three different strands, and then of course, then it grows legs because, for example, the students then have their siblings and parents come so many times a year, so they come, and then they have sort of friends from other universities interact. You know, a lot of people in St Andrews have friends in Edinburgh University, for example, or Dundee. So we get a lot of, if you like, fresh visitors all the time. And then, of course, by the very nature of the university, every year is a different intake of people, and therefore it grows. Yeah. And indeed, tourism, the golfers keep going. So it does work. And of course, a shop like Curiosity has to thrive on that to have a different a lot of people all the time. And indeed, it's the same as a shop. We keep on changing. The landscape of the shop changes. You'll come in one day and you'll look at your favourite vinyls, and then you'll come in the next day to buy it and it's been sold.
Yeah.
Because everything is sort of one-off and unique, and it, you know, changes from one week to the next.
Do you, because of that, then also have many, say, collectors that come in, and, you know, the same kind of people that come back year after year to maybe try and find certain vinyls or cameras or whatever it could be?
Absolutely. I think that most definitely we have a sort of fan club, if you like, of collectors from all over. And in fact, because we try to be extremely keen and reasonable on our pricing, it makes for dealers in, shall we say, more affluent areas such as the centre of London, that when a dealer who has a shop in the centre of London will come up, buy an item at a retail price from Curiosity, then take it back down to London and sort of do up his markup, and that's it.
George talks so much because it's in London.
Well, so, exactly. But I mean, for example, we were on a program on television to do one of these sort of shows, and the experts come in and buy stuff, and then they buy it from shops, and then they sell it in auction.
Right.
And they did pretty well from Curiosity. They bought a few items that made a hell of a lot of money profit in auction for
them. That's amazing.
I didn't realise Curiosity had that sort of national impact either, because clearly if it's got TV coverage and you've got sort of dealers in London, that's something I didn't know about Curiosity before. So clearly it's got sort of tentacles in different areas.
In a small way, you know, we'd like to be modest about it, but we'd like to think that most people who visit St Andrews sort of do, it's on their list to visit sort of thing.
That's amazing.
And in the retail sector, you know.
Have you always been interested in antique things and, you know, these kind of objects? Is that why you have ended up now having this shop?
Yes, all my life I've been interested in sort of antiques, and I look at, maybe an antique, whether it's a piece of furniture, whether it's a building, whether it's a statue, and I look at it in a different way than maybe most people. Ever since I was a youngster, I would look at, for example, a statue in the centre of London, and I wouldn't just see the statue, but I would visualise the poor guys in some sort of stonemason in sort of 1833 by candlelight and a chisel, and he's doing it, and then the taskmaster would say, come on, hurry up, you know. And then suddenly he makes a mistake and he chips off a nose and he has to start all over again with a new block. So I think of the whole, what life must have been like and how they made all these most wonderful items. As I said, architecture, buildings, wood carvings, any item. And you think that we talk about modern technology. They had nothing then. There wasn't even electricity going back to the early days when they made some of these most beautiful pieces of furniture. And probably that's what I saw, that's what I got interested in, and that's how I look at things. And I've always been fascinated, and I've collected items all my life, and then it outgrows you, and suddenly you've got no room to move, and you have to take a decision to sell. But there you are.
That's lovely. So do you keep now going around on auctions and et cetera to try and find things for your shop? Or is it mostly other people coming into your shop?
It's got to the point now, thanks to all our supporters and everybody, that mostly people come to us and bring stuff in as opposed to us to have to go out and search it. And because we don't have the capacity, obviously, to show everything, we have to be quite discerning. So we do have quite enough, you know, with people bringing stuff in, and as I say, it grows. It's like a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend, and suddenly you've from one person bringing something in, you've got 10 others bringing something as well.
Can I just ask, what is it about an item, a quirky object, or something that you look for? Is it something that's unique and separates it from everything else, or is it more something that speaks to you artistically, like you described with the statue in London? And how you visualise the whole background to it, and is that what...
I'd love to use the word unique, and sometimes you do get a couple of bits and pieces that come through that are unique, per se, but I like to use the word more unusual and not of the norm. I wouldn't say, you know, the sort of one-of-a-kind masterpieces that we get, but sometimes we do get some handmade items that that are relatively unique, and I look for... As I say, the unusual. I look for something that you wouldn't walk down the store and get in a regular high street, which is the same. Talking about shops, I mean, every high street you go to now in the UK, if you blindfolded somebody and took him in a helicopter and dropped him somewhere and he opened his eyes, by walking up and down a high street, he'd have no clue where he was. You've got all the usual suspects in the high street, and that's it. It's the same from Land's End to John O'Groats. And I think that what I love about St Andrews as a town, as a community, is that it does have individual shops. And I'm not just talking about mine. I mean, there's many, many fabulous shops in St Andrews that all have their individuality. Yes, of course, we've got a couple of the chains and everything, but I think we're still lucky in St Andrews that there are some very individual shops. There's some great gift shops. There's some great clothes shops. There's some great individual still rules in St Andrews, which is great, and long may it last.
Yeah.
That's very interesting, yeah.
No, I definitely agree. And on that note, could you point out, like, one specific item that you have found, you know, original and maybe the most unusual one that's come into the shop?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot there. I mean, there's just so many different items.
It's, I can imagine.
I tend to be a creature of mood. As I said, I don't sort of look at any one thing. As I said, I have love for architecture, I have love for statues, I have love for a carved item, I have love for unusual work of art, a book, a beautifully bound book, a nice illustration artwork. So it's very difficult, and being a sort of a creature of mood, which you have to be to be in my business, you know, to adapt, I think that I would appreciate each item for its own sake. But we have some many fabulous items. I mean, in I don't want to upset any listeners who are against it, but for example, taxidermy, which is maybe a controversial subject these days, but we have some great taxidermy that comes in but I stress from Victorian times. Some of those are fabulous, bits and pieces. We have Militaria artifacts. We have some great medals. And again, I don't just look at the medal as an object. I look at the story behind that and wonder who would have won that medal in 1870 and what campaign did he fight? What did he do to get it? And what was his situation like? What was his family like? So maybe I look at an object like that. So there's so many.
So would you say that in your sort of business and your area of interest, that comparison is essentially irrelevant unless it's two very, very similar things? In terms of if you're comparing, a carved object with a statue or a building, or to select one thing which you would say was objectively better is kind of irrelevant because...
Values. Exactly, they all have their own importance, and whether I look at Nelson's Column and look at the architectural and stonemasonry feat and the sheer engineering of how that went up all those years ago, or whether you compare that to a sort of a beautifully detailed hand-illustrated picture of a flower, I think they both have their individual merits, and one is on a diametrically opposed scale to the other, but they still both have their great parts of integrity. It's difficult to sort of pick over one to the other, you know, what you like best. But I try and be objective to everything and judge it on each. As long as it's good, I think if it's good quality, if it was made with passion, I think that's a word, passion. You can see an object if it's made with passion and quality, it comes through. Yeah. And I think that you can adapt that to anything. You can get a piece of clothing and you can examine it and look at it. And it doesn't, the cost is immaterial whether you get it. But if it was made well, and then I think that you can...
That's actually what I love about your shop, because when you enter, you can just feel how passionate you are about all the items that are in your shop, and you also have the knowledge about all the things that you have in your shop. Like, everything that someone asks you about, you seem to know everything about, and it's just amazing to walk into a shop where someone both has that passion and that knowledge.
Well, thank you very much for saying that. I think that's overstated, really, but thank you.
I do appreciate
that. Well, thank you. That's a lovely compliment. But to all your listeners out there, I know a very, very small, tiny amount about perhaps maybe a lot of things. I suppose jack of all trades cliche strings to mind. I try to learn and research, and if something comes in, and of course we do have wonderful technology now with the internet, and it's fabulous that if something comes in that I know nothing about, and that happens all the time, at least I have the technology to go and maybe research it, even if it's only one or two paragraphs. So I try to have a very, very thin scraping of the surface knowledge about that item that comes in, so that if somebody comes in and asks that, at least I can think. So I'm far from having great knowledge about everything, but at least I do try, and thank you for saying it comes across, because I do care about things. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And on that really lovely note, the voice of timekeeping is going to butt in slightly, and we'll go with our first song, which is Righteous Brothers' Unchained Melody.
And we are back, and today we have the lovely Dave Christian, the runner of Curiosity, with us, talking about his lovely shop with very interesting items in it. I am very curious about, how you kind of got this to develop into the shop and being a student and, you know, thinking about my future, etc. Would you have any tips to, you know, me and students in general, you know, how you sort of develop an idea into a business?
Well, I think it starts with the word we used earlier about passion. If you have a passion for something, follow your passion, follow your heart, and if it's scalable into something that you can earn your living at, and a wild example, if you're passionate about golf and you're in the right town to be, and you're practice and practice and practice and get good enough, hopefully you can earn your living if you love golf. That can be then gone across the board. If you love singing, you know, again, the three most important things on anything is practice, practice, practice. And if you can earn your living, it's great. And I happen to love sort of unusual items, but not, as we discussed, as one genre. I don't have one particular, you know, some people just specialise in, say, maybe a porcelain, or I kind of go across the board, but don't have any particular even age. I mean, if something was made 2 years ago and is unique and unusual, it can go alongside something that's 150-year-old in the shop and still take equal pride of place.
Mm. So what would you... I was just interested to know sort of the sort of general trends of what are the customers usually interested in, and so what items or genres of items are most popular when they come in?
Again, that changes from day to day, week to week, month to month. We have some students who are... We mentioned about vinyls, who are great collectors of vinyls. We have some students who are interested in sort of antiques and different bits and pieces, militaria, musical instruments. You have, as you know, you're a student of a fantastic university that is full of talent here, mm-hmm. and you have talent in all departments, notwithstanding musical talent. And we have a lot of musical instruments. As you can see, some old antique guitars and some quite modern. Mm. And we have flutes, saxophones, all kinds of musical instruments. So we do have a lot of students who go for that, as indeed visitors. I use the word student, visitors come. We have students that are interested in quirky items, such as vintage postcards that tell a story. They're handwritten by somebody in 1891, and it's fascinating to read what somebody wrote in those days, which again is quirky because...
Actually, where have you gotten all of those from? Because I remember seeing them. You have so many of them laying in those drawers, and it's really fascinating to see them. Have you gotten all of them from the same person, or where do they actually come from?
No, all across the country, all different, and as I say, collections, and people bring things in, and it's almost a slice of history because postcards is something that I don't believe anybody ever sends postcards nowadays. I think it's all done by text and email, isn't it? But I mean, in my day, there was no such thing, and if you wanted to communicate with somebody across the country, you had to either send a letter or a telegram. That was it. There was no other way of communication. But of course, since mobile phones and internet, which has killed sort of the art of letter writing, and when I say letter writing, I'm talking about the actual freehand pen and paper and ink sort of thing. Which
I actually tried to do that myself with my friends. I like to kind of try to keep that tradition. It's a nice thing. But no, you're right. It doesn't really happen that often nowadays.
I guess I might do it more if my handwriting was more legible.
Although Mama Leach is single-handedly keeping the postcard tradition alive. We have over 4,000 at home that she's collected. And because they're more valuable if they have a post stamp on, we get to the situation where she's sending them to herself across the country.
Fabulous. Well, Mama Leach, you sound fascinating, and you have a personal invitation from me to come to Curiosity and I'd love to see some of your collection.
That'd
there,
be amazing.
Yeah. I guess, again, sort of linking in Curiosity with the town, but on a more sort of intellectual level, do you think that the fact that it is a university town and it is a sort of hotbed of intellectual activity, that these, like you were saying with the postcards, that students come in or visitors come in and they see maybe not just artistic, they don't have just pursue their artistic interests, but actually find these things intellectually stimulating as well, although I guess there's a bit of a grey area as to what is what. But so what kind of link do you think that the intellectual side of the shop has to do with the intellectual side of the town?
Yes, well, I mean, talking about postcards, and of course intellectual, we have a fabulous collection of books going from from contemporary books way through to I think the earliest book we have at the moment is about 1830.
Oh, wow.
Very cool. But talking about postcards, I must point out, if you can't already tell, I'm not an intellectual. Just in case you listeners didn't know that, but I'll declare that I'm not an intellectual. But having said that, the style of writing, the use of the language, of even if it was a sort of postcard to say, look, I'm enjoying myself, you can see that the difference in the style of writing from sort of 1920s to present day. And I think an intellectual will glean a lot of information as to the different culture, if you like, between people in those days and how it's come today. I mean, for example, I think the I'm right in saying that the largest growing language in the world now is text speak. GR figure 8 means great, apparently.
Right, yeah.
And this is a whole new language born of text, which, of course, my generation never heard of. But so it's nice to probably see, going back to your question, it's nice to see perhaps from an intellectual point of view of how people communicated in those days.
Yeah.
How did your mums and grandmothers and great-grandmothers and grandfathers get together in the first place? You know, there was no text, you know, great, how about a date or whatever. It was, if you asked somebody for a date in those days, they'd give you some sort of things from growing in the Arabian desert, sweet to eat.
Mm.
So I think it's interesting, and you can glean that from the postcards.
Mm.
So that could possibly give some interest to...
That is really interesting. And are there a lot of the items that come in that you might keep yourself? Or do you try to, store everything in the shop to sell it?
If I could afford it and if I had a big enough space, I would keep everything and never sell anything.
Yeah.
I think you have to be disciplined and you have to turn around. And, yes, some lovely objects come along, and I think that I look upon it now as that even if I'm just a custodian of them in the shop for a week or a month or however long they sell, that is good enough for me. At least it's passed through. And if it's, I've had the pleasure of having it for a week and then somebody else, it goes to a home where somebody really enjoys it and then it's passed on.
Yeah.
I think that is far better than locking it all away in a room and never seeing the light of day.
I guess one of the values about these things is that it's there to be shared, in a sense. And the thing is, what I find with antiques is it does tend to change hands quite a lot of times. And so lots of different people get to appreciate it. And so do you think that is one of the values of antiques and quirky objects, etc.?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a fabulous thing to do. And I think that it's great to see young people taking an interest in something that's old rather than just the disposable society we live in and the plastic society we live in. It's nice to see people are going back and looking in, especially from the shop. Students are coming in and they are looking for something of quality as opposed to just a sort of a cheap disposable item that they can get anywhere, which is going back to, we said about the vinyl, there's a resurgence.
Mm.
People are discovering, I mean, one of the largest growing things, vintage clothing, for example.
Yeah.
And if you look at, I mentioned before, if you take vintage clothing, and St Andrews has the most fabulous vintage fairs on, and you can get the most amazing vintage and from turn of the century to the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. And I think that I'm right in saying that even up until the 50s, the clothes were made, and I come back to the word, with a passion, and everybody really loved it in those days, whereas now, possibly they're just sort of maybe churned out, mass-marketed, but people are going back, and that's why there is a great market.
Do you think it's because that the modern society has kind of developed into more capitalistic and sort of more big business and lots of marketing, advertising, etc.? Do you think that this is the reason why people sort of becoming more interested in the complete opposite, i.e. vinyl, vintage clothing, and sort of antique objects which just have more intrinsic value than the things we...
Well, not only that, but remember, they were built to last. Not to name any names, but if you go and buy what I call a modern piece of flat-pack furniture today and look at the lifespan of that, that's made with a sort of a cheap chipboard and covered, and then compare it to an object that was made in solid oak 100 years ago that is still going strong... I think people are realising the value of that. But, of course, as you rightly mentioned, big business, and I don't think that big business, it's in their interest to have anything last. I mean, for example, if you could buy a pair of shoes with your, apart from the fashion, the changing fashion, but it, as a wild example, if you could buy a pair of shoes that never wore out... where would big business be in the shoe industry? Cars, if cars didn't rust, what would, if you had a car that would go on for 50 years and you never needed to buy another one, where would we be? So I do understand the need for that, but I think that that wasn't so prevalent or thought of in business years ago when they made items of very, very high quality and value, purely and simply because the resources was there. Instead of making chipboard, it was made with solid oak or solid mahogany.
That's amazing. Do you know what the oldest object you've gotten in, or from what time normally do you get?
Well, that's an easy
items
one.
From
that's an easy one. The by far the oldest objects that we get in on a fairly regular basis would be Roman coins. So that's nothing in terms of age. There was a lot of them. So it's not, you can buy a Roman coin for a few pounds today. I mean, obviously there are some in fabulous in solid gold that are in museums. But I'm talking about the sort of the common stuff. So in terms of age, yes, we go right back to. To objects, i.e. an old coin from the Roman times. They're the easiest, oldest things,
And so what sort of reach do your items... Well, if we were to plot a map of where the items are from, where would be the most strange or remote parts that you've received something from?
Well, I had... I forgot to ask whether it was north or south. I presumed it was South Korea. I had a visitor from Korea. I'm going to assume it was South Korea because I think it's easier for them to travel there.
Yeah.
And it was there was a sort of a lovely, beautiful, like a sort of a carved type object from Korea, which was relatively old. I think it was turn of the century, turn of the 20th century, 1900 odd. And it was a lovely object from Korea. So that was. That was probably one of the far-flung that came to St Andrews.
Okay.
And, of course, you guys are very lucky because you have the most fabulous cosmopolitan mix of people from all over the world. I mean, being one of the top universities on the planet, I would say that you're very lucky in terms that you do have students from every far corner of the world. And I think you guys are very lucky to mix with all different, and it rubs off on us because, you know, somebody might come over from bring something and then after their first year here they bring it to the shop maybe and let us sell it. So
definitely. So you have someone in, I mean, I guess every week to give you some items, or is it daily, or how often do you have people coming into the shop giving you
again
items?
no particular, you know, we could have somebody bringing stuff in, you know, 4 or 5 times a day and then go for a few days without anything. And then, of course, we get phone calls from various people wanting to sort of say, can we sell them? And we try to be discerning. And as I say, we try and keep everything and we advertise in terms of unusual items bought and sold. So we try and keep it as long as it sort of fits into that keyword unusual.
Yeah, something that's sort of rare and you wouldn't be able to just find like that very easily.
Not easily purchased in the norm, in the main shopping streets.
Right, I think
we'll 20 minutes is Flame by Again Little Starlets, and we're going to have Sweet Caroline, which is one of my favourites.
We're it began. I can't begin to know it, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring out of strings? Spring became the summer. Would have believed you'd come along. Hands, touching hands, reaching out, dear Lord.
I just wanted to ask you, Dave, clearly have a lot of vinyl in your store, and so are you a big music fan?
Yes, I love that. I must say that I'm still stuck in the late 50s and 60s. I think that was the greatest.
Nothing wrong about that. Yeah, love that
era.
Kind of music as well.
And that's where I stay. Also, we have a fabulous big collection of American comics, Superman comics, again from the 50s and 60s and going right through 70s, etc. So yeah, I kind of that's my era, if you like. I loved the 60s and I grew up, and being in London. I was very fortunate. I lived, my little flat was over a place called Denmark Street, which is housed the very famous Tin Pan Alley.
Yeah.
And all the musicians started there, Dick James Music, everybody there. And I sort of had the pleasure of meeting, that's a lie, actually. I didn't meet them, but I saw them there.
Yeah.
People like Brian Epstein, who managed the Beatles, and John Lennon was always
there.
And all these people. So I saw them, and at that day there was no big deal because they weren't really that famous in at that time. But I was, that's what I grew up on.
Yeah.
The biggest star to me at that time was a guy called Joe Brown. He was mega. He was the biggest. If all your listeners Google Joe Brown and the Brothers, he was one of the, Britain's biggest stars. And I remember when I was a kid, I sold him my water pistol, and I was laughing because it only cost me sixpence, and I sold it for 1 and 6, made a shilling profit. But
business.
So that born was, a that business
was,
yeah, man,
so
right?
I suppose that's where my business acumen started. Mind you, not that my business acumen was very good, because we tend to buy more than we sell. I think it should be the other way around. So hence the shop being crowded. So we need some of your listeners to come in and relieve us of some stuff, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's difficult to turn away anything that people bring in, especially if they have sort of a value that you see in them. But even if it doesn't make sense on a business level, it's not really what curiosity is about, I get that impression.
No, I mean, if something comes in that I feel that won't sell, but is a fantastic sort of attraction, if you like, it's so unusual.
Yeah.
And I think everybody has something in their home maybe that is unusual and not particularly useful for anything. But if it's a drawer and it can bring people in, it's just conversation. People will start, and I suppose the conversation piece. A lot of people have things and. So what does it do? It doesn't do anything, but it create a conversation and stimulate a conversation as to what it is or what it isn't.
Yeah. We were just talking. Rachel's not going to enjoy this one bit.
Unusual things to have in your home.
Yeah.
We were talking in the break about items that Rachel have at home.
Yes. Another shout out to Mama Leacher. My father went to India and bought back what he found at the back of some poor woman's antique shop. Which is essentially two hubcaps welded together with the wooden handle, which we all think is an urn. Anyone seen the film Chocolat? She throws an urn down the stairs halfway through and it cracks and her husband's ashes come out. Well, it looks like that. And my dad claims it's a Mongolian water carrier, which we are looking to get rid of if anyone wants hubcaps welded together.
Curiosity is here.
Yeah. Yes. That would be definitely a free item, just... Mum has it by the back door and Dad keeps moving it in as a sort of centrepiece on the mantelpiece, and it keeps working its way out again.
Cold War in the Leech household.
Yeah.
I just thought it'd be interesting to bring that up because just thinking about my own home, I think we have a few things here and there, but I don't think we have any Mongolian water carriers slash urns.
Yeah, we've got an Asian map which we brought halfway down the Yangtze Gorge, which is actually, it's so obvious it's been faked. It's got an iron mark on the back of it. But my dad bought it purely for that fact, because you can sort of see the tea bag stains and the iron mark. It's fantastic, but it's completely useless.
Oh, wow. But so do you have some antique things in your house?
My parents used to travel a bit, and so there's things. I think they have some things from Kenya, and when I went to Africa, when I went to Zambia, I brought some things back. But we don't have that many things. I think when I was in Berlin, I bought a piece of the Berlin Wall, and it's hanging around somewhere. So yeah, just things lying here and there. What about you? Do you have?
Mind you
and your travels, you must have some things.
Well, I didn't really buy that many things from my travels. Mostly just like a leather band, like armrests and stuff like that. But I guess my mom is just really interested in the Asian culture in general. So she loves to go to China and just buy all of these like bowls and like cutlery and, you know, just random things to hang on the walls and just loads of picture on like Chinese children in our house, like really random, but she loves it. But I guess that's it. My dad isn't that much for antique things, to be honest. He just kind of, you know, likes what my mom buys.
Doesn't have an opinion.
Yeah, no.
It's definitely a sort of adds a personal touch having some antiques in your home, I think. And it's
it's
personal.
Definitely like brings character to the house, very much so.
I think so as well. And I don't actually have anything else to ask. Was there anything anybody else wanted to talk about? Because I'm not sure whether we're being pressed
for time. Is there anything in general that you would like to recommend? I'm just thinking now as a person, as Dave Christian, maybe a good book or anything, you know, in life, in general, just something you would like to say.
No, I think you just mentioned about having interest. I mean, let me give you an example. For example, if you were to have a game of cards, think about buying an antique pack of cards, for example, as opposed to a modern pack of cards. It just, again, as you're playing, it gives a new dimension. And you can think, well, who's played these cards, you know, 60 years ago? Mm. And it all tells a story. And as I say, even if you have a cup of tea and you drink out of a cup from the 50s, think of where it came from. And then imagine the people that were drinking out of that before you, as opposed to buying something modern that has no soul or previous life to it. So I think that perhaps there's always a great interest in getting something. And of course, we use this word, you know, recycle. It's all recycled. I mean, we've got enough plastic on the planet. You know, we've got enough. We don't need to keep on churning out all this stuff. I mean, so think about that next time you go and buy a brand new thing. Maybe if you buy something vintage that's used again and give it a re-life, not only will it bring some sort of conversation and imagine would it live, but it will also be saving our planet, which I think that that you guys, especially in universities and especially St Andrews, I think are at the forefront of if you like, the future custodians of our planet. And I think that you do have to think about maybe cutting down on all this terrible wastage and burning of energy, of unnecessary output.
From a slightly more mercenary point of view, do you find people coming in to look for that kind of object that they're going to sell for a lot? Because I know my family watch Antiques Roadshow and we're always out for that thing you find in a skip that's going to be £60,000.
Yes, I think of course everybody would all be lying. I'd love something to come in the shop and sort of buy it for a pound and sell it for £100,000. Obviously, but that's why we have lottery. That's why we all buy lottery tickets. I mean, everybody. It's human nature. Yes, of course. But then I think that yes, there's a lot of people that do come in for that. But the majority of people come into curiosity for something that they're going to enjoy and like, and as a gift. And of course, gifts. That's a nice thing to give. Instead of just buying something, they come and buy an older object to give as a present to somebody. So yeah, we do have, obviously everybody has this, all of us, we all have a mercenary streak in us, otherwise we wouldn't be given. But I think that if you can balance your mercenary with perhaps everything in life is a balance, and if you can if you can do something to save the planet at the same time as of getting something nice, then I think everybody wins then, don't they?
No, definitely. Such a nice message.
Yeah, very enlightening.
Very wise words there, Dave. Let's see what the time is saying. Are we running out of time?
Time to say goodbye.
I think we're actually being pressed out for the first time on this show's history. There's actually someone coming on after us, so I think we're going to have to stick on the last song.
Okay. It's been such a pleasure having you.
No, thank you very much, and thank you to all your listeners for tuning in.
Thank you all for listening, and we will see you again next week.
Tainted Love by Soft Sound.